Hello, and welcome to another version of Life Meets Work Thought Leader podcast series. Today, we're excited to welcome Erica Wendt. She's a project advisor in organizational effectiveness at the Southern California Gas Company. It's a utility owned by Sempra Energy. We're really, really excited to talk with Erica today because she is leading an initiative to develop a flexible, what they call smart work culture, in their downtown LA headquarters. She and I met a few weeks ago in LA and had a really wonderful conversation where she showed me some of the tools that she's using and shared a lot of great stories about not only her program, but also the learnings and sort of next steps for her. And I just thought it would be tremendously beneficial for our members to be able to hear from her about that experience. Erica has a PhD in industrial and organizational psychology, where she studied work-life fit research and business strategy for the past 10 years, including a dissertation that she did on managers' perceptions of employees' commitment when requesting a flex work arrangement. So, Erica, welcome. We're excited to have you today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us about the process or the story behind implementing flexible work at a utilities company. I can only imagine kind of the process that you're having to go through to kind of get everyone up to speed and educate everyone on flexibility, especially in what I would imagine is a fairly traditional work culture. So could you just kind of tell us your story to start out with today?
Sure. You know, it is a fairly traditional work culture being at SoCalGas, and we've had employees that have been with the company for over 30 years, and it's not uncommon to hear of people being there for, you know, 25 and even retiring at 35 years. So we have a lot of long-timers that have been with us. With that in mind, trying to implement change within a culture like that has been very interesting. And how it all started was that last April, I believe, we got a new CEO, and his name is Mike Allman. And Mike said, you know, there just has to be a different way that we think about how we work. And, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to have people always coming down to downtown LA. There's a traffic issue. We are a utility company. We're trying to always think of different ways for alternative energy and so for the environment. At the same time that Mike is saying all of that, we also knew that we were going to have to renew our lease within that building and that we were not making the most efficient use of our workspace. So we knew that we were going to have to condense our floors and make more efficient use of that workspace. So it kind of just went hand in hand that maybe telework would be an option, maybe more flexible ways of working would be an option, and that's kind of how it all started. So ever since then, I have been working really to this point and definitely going forward on creating a more flexible work culture within the organization. What we found was that people were already working, you know, maybe one day a week from home, or we already have flexible hours just because of the nature of the work that we do, and some of our employees need to be there as early as 5 a.m., and, you know, we need to have employees stay late. So that was already a part of it. But what we found was that we needed to make it more formal and really make it okay to have these conversations with managers and with employees, and that it was okay to say that you were working from home and that you didn't need to feel guilty about it, or that you were coming in at 9 o'clock for various reasons, and that you shouldn't have to feel guilty about saying those things.
And Erica, you know, a lot of the organizations we talk with, really, it can be a difficult decision sometimes to decide to go formal. You know, sometimes organizations will think, well, you know, we're already kind of doing it, and the people who need it ask, and the rest of the people must not really need it. And, you know, I don't know if we really want to make it a formal thing. What was the reason or the catalyst for you to decide to make it a formal program? What were the advantages you saw there?
Well, for one, we saw that by having a formal program, we could provide better support and resources, not only for managers that were leading teams that were flexible, but also for employees. And we also saw it as a way that we could start advertising, you know, a great benefit of working with SoCalGas. We already know it's a great company to work for, and here are other reasons why our employees love working for us as well. And so we also saw it as a way to start thinking about how we do performance management. So by having all this formalities, but just having more support and resources in creating that formal program, that we could accomplish those goals. So the employee productivity, the recruitment and the attraction and selection things, and also trying to think what are our other goals. Employee engagement, just things like that. We could start having more of those types of conversations with managers and saying that, flexible work was part of this and that they recognize that that was part of our goals and initiatives as well.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is really aligning flex as a business strategy, not just as this accommodation for individuals.
Absolutely. Much better words than I put it.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'm not trying to put better words, just formulating mine and in terms of what I'm thinking about what you're saying. So can you take us through just the basic implementation steps? Sounds like it came from the top down, which is always a blessing. It helps us get over some initial hurdles that other organizations who start with the grassroots and have to deal with. So what did you do? Did you have to build a business case, or was the business case already pretty clear to the CEO and you just kind of moved into implementation mode right away? Can you take us through the implementation steps?
Sure. I'm going to start with last fall. I'll start last summer. We had definitely top-down support. Our CEO was very supportive of this, and he immediately got his leadership team on board and said, this is what I want for our company. This is really what I need you to provide support for and where I see the vision of our company going. And so that was last summer. So last fall, we started conducting executive interviews with the leadership team and just asking them, what are your thoughts about workplace flexibility? Where do you see this for your team? What are some of the concerns that you have? We also conducted focus groups with our directors and managers and with our employees to find out what they thought about workplace flexibility and what concerns they might have with this. And we also did an employee survey across the employees that are in our downtown LA office and asking them about how long do you spend in a commute? Do you have flexible hours right now? Are there any concerns that you have with your manager approving an arrangement like that? And so after we were, doing all the follow-up on all of that research this past spring, we started communicating the results to our leadership team, and then I also started making presentations at our VP's all-hands meeting to say, this is smart work. Let me introduce this to you, and we're going to introduce this going forward to your direct reports and to their employees. And this is kind of what Mike Allman's vision is of the company and where we want to see this going forward, and these are the practical steps that we're going to take to get there. The other thing that we started doing... go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
So the other thing that we are doing, and we did start last spring, were the manager forums. And this is where we gathered all the managers, so anyone with direct reports, together. And we basically said, this is what we expect of you as leaders. This is what smart work is. This is what it could look like for your team. And this is how... we really wanted to empower them to take it back to their teams and to have all the answers that they needed to be able to answer the questions that we knew that employees were going to ask them.
And so how did that process go? What was the manager's reaction when you did that?
It was mixed. At first we had a lot of this is absolutely not going to work for my team, and we have to be at the gas company tower from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. 5 days per week, and so that was at first. There was a lot of that, but there was also managers that were going, I've been doing this informally. I am so glad that I can just start announcing this, that I'm doing this, and so they were very excited about it. And For the managers that had the resistance, what we were able to do was then follow up with them after the managers' forums and say, okay, what's really going on here? We know that your group does this particular job, and it doesn't necessarily need to happen at Gas Tower between the hours of 9 and 5, and it may make more sense for your group to have a little bit of flexibility there. And there were many issues that came up as to why that manager was resistant, whether it was, this is the way we've always done things, I don't see the need to change it now, or they had concerns about performance issues, or it was really just their management style. And so there was different ways that we were able to work with those managers to say, well, what if we try some flexible hours? We know that this employee wants it. What if we try some flexible hours for a month? And if it doesn't work out, no reason why you can't go back on it. And then with the managers that were kind of the, you know, underlying supporters and had been doing this for a while, we started making them really the champions of the message and getting them to start talking at the other manager forums that we were having and start saying, yes, this is the way that it's been working for my group, and as your peer, I understand the concerns and needs that you're having, and this is the way I really think it can start working for your group because this is the way it's worked for me.
Yeah, so you know what I want to point out in as I'm listening to the things that you're saying about implementation, I haven't heard yet any words about policies and about toolkits and about the specific logistical things that so many of us think about when we think about implementation. And I call that out because I think it's really important for our members and our listeners to think through the fact that that all of this work you did was really to socialize the issues, to pull in stakeholders, to build support, so that when you started to do the tactical, more transitional parts of the implementation, you had everybody on board. Was that, did you do that on purpose, or did it just sort of work out that way, Erica?
I think there was definitely some intentional moves in that, because I wanted to ensure that everyone was on board with this and that we had their buy-in. But at the same time, while, you know, we are socializing it around with our VPs at their all-hands meetings and talking to the managers about this, I had been working behind the scenes with legal, with our safety group, with our VP of HR to get all of those details worked out. So our telework agreement, our safety guidelines, because that is going to be the one thing that I knew our managers were going to start pointing to and saying, well, you don't have this worked out, or you don't have the resources that I need to be able to implement this with employees, and how can I go to an employee without an agreement? That's not going to work for me. So a lot of that was happening behind the scenes, but that socializing aspect of it was front and center for us because we wanted to ensure that everybody was on board with this and that it was starting to become part of the everyday conversation that people were having and that it was okay to have these conversations.
Yeah, so you really saw this as a critical part of the culture change work that you had to be doing. And
yeah.
What I think is really important about the way you approached this was that you saw that the culture change part of this had to be integrated into your implementation from the very beginning. Because a lot of organizations right now are really faced with the fact that they did the transactional work around getting the policy in place and getting everybody, the communication out there and getting everyone trained. But then it's like, oh, okay, well, now the next step is we got to work on the culture. And that's one of the things I'm really impressed by about your approach is the fact that you, from the very beginning, knew that culture was on the table and started to work at it.
Yeah, and maybe this is even personal too, but I'm going, I don't want to write policy all day. So...
Yeah, I
guess you are. So that, you know, to me didn't sound fun. So maybe it was selfishly, I'm going, how can I make my job better and more fun?
Yeah, at the same time that you're doing all this really hard culture change work. That's excellent. And so you started to get at what were some of the obstacles that managers were bringing up or were raising, either in these forums or, you know, in separate side conversations with you. What were some of the general themes there?
I think the most common things, I think there's three common things that we heard. One, performance management. And, of course, classic, how can I manage people, or, you know, how do I know that they're working if I can't see them? And, of course, we're responding, classic response, how do you know they're working now? just trying to get over those things. And the way that we were able, I mean, we're still working through that. Definitely, we're not at a performance management place where we want to be right now. So we're still working through all of that. But really able to talk to managers about the different ways that they can look at performance, and that it's not about how many hours the person puts in, and really getting rid of those conversations where this person is a harder worker because they've worked 16 hours. And, you know, really getting people to think about, why do you say that? Why do you have that in your mind? And do you understand the relationship between thinking hours worked and being a better worker, how that's going to not enable you to have this workplace flexibility? So really
right.
getting people to start thinking about those types of things. The other two concerns that people had, being a utility company, number one priority always, always, always is safety. And so managers were coming to these forums, and it was kind of it shouldn't have been a surprise to me, but it was somewhat surprising to me, that their main concern was, how are we going to be sure that our employees are as safe as they are at Gas Company Tower as they will be at home? And what is the company going to do to ensure that they're safe at home?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, think about ergonomics and thinking about safety guidelines. And so we needed to work with our ergonomists, we needed to work with our safety group, we needed to work with our kind of workers' compensation group to get some data around that, what types of equipment can we provide for employees at a home office, you know, just different things around safety that needed to be addressed to ensure that managers felt better about employees working from home and that there wasn't going to be an increase in any incidents. The other thing was business etiquette, and this was also kind of a surprise to me, that managers were saying, okay, so we have this new office environment, and we're going to have people that are teleworking, and then, you know, they only come into the office every now and then. We're going to have a lot more conference calls. And we're also probably going to have people that are using more team rooms. And basically, they were telling me, HR, you need to write a policy about how people should behave in the office and how they should, you know, act on conference calls. And again, I'm going, I don't want to write a policy on this. And so we did business etiquette videos. And we had people really just this very visual way of talking and using examples as to how people should not behave in the workplace, and here are some tips and ideas on how to act better. So that's the way we were able to address that manager concern. But, yes, so performance management, safety, and then business etiquette were the three main concerns that managers had kind of in resistance to really flexible work in general.
Well, and this is really where it comes down to being very, flex has to be very culturally specific, that because, like you said, in a utilities environment, safety is number one. And in a lot of organizations, depending on where you are in the organization, safety may be, if you're on a plant floor or a shop floor, safety may be the number one issue. And so to me, what's really cool about what you're saying is that you can even tie safety and flexibility together, and you can go back and review what are the group norms of behavior when we're on conference calls and that sort of thing. Those things are still things that every practitioner who has to work on implementing a program have to address. We have to address the OSHA issues in a telework agreement, and we have to address how do we act using all of this new technology? But for you, it took on a very special kind of front and center role. And so I think even if safety isn't as critical for another organization, there may be some other issue that is really going to be have to be front and center. And so it sounds like to me one of the big successes for you and your organization was to step back and say, huh, okay, this might have surprised you or might not have surprised you, but gosh, okay, we can work on that, right? And you stayed loose to be able to address it as opposed to saying, what are you talking about, or that, you know, kind of brushing over it.
Yeah, and, you know, also being able to bring in resources and really pull together resources from across the organization, not just going, this is an HR-driven thing, so, you know, HR is going to have all the answers, but being able to work with the safety group, being able to work with our ergonomists to create a, you know, ergonomics in the home office video and create these guidelines, being able to work with IT, that has been so key in really rolling this out across the organization, because without that type of support and buy-in and their feedback, there's no way that we would be where we are today without that.
Yeah, and I think that's another really important lesson and for people to consider. You know, so many times we think, well, I'm the one who owns it. I got to do all the heavy lifting, and there's just no way for us to know all of the different aspects of the things we need to know. Like you said, you know, an ergonomist, I can't be an ergonomist, so go find one, you know, and then you learn as you go. And so what would you say surprised you the most in this entire process so far? And I know you're still, you know, you're in the middle of it, but what surprised you so far?
I'd say one of the things that I did not expect, I thought that people would be so excited to work from home, and they were, and so excited to have more flexible hours, and they absolutely were. But because people have worked for the company for so long, this has become their family. And this was something that we heard in our focus groups. And I mean, we had people crying in our focus groups that this company means so much to them and their coworkers mean so much to them that to take that away and to have people where they don't have that community when they come to work, they saw that as something that was very challenging for them. Mm-hmm. And they did not want to lose that feeling of family within the company. And so when you have people that are more distributed, kind of like that distributed workforce, how do we ensure that that sense of family remains? And it's something that we're still working on and, you know, trying to think of ways that we can create a community for people that are teleworking, that maybe you don't see them until 9 a.m. and you've been there since 5. How do we ensure that that sense of community and family remains in the company? Because it's a really strong point why employees stay with the company for as long as they do.
Yeah, and this issue of culture, whether it's that you decorate your cubicle in some crazy way or it's that people for 30 years have gotten accustomed to walking through the door and saying hello to the same people day in and day out, those cultural issues really need to be addressed. That's really interesting. So if you were going to go back and start over, would you do anything differently?
Oh, there's always things. Hindsight is 20/20. You know, when I look back on it now, and this is something that I'm working through even today, of streamlining the telework request process,
okay.
I basically just had to throw something together to get this up and running. And, you know, there's different organizations that I'm researching and knowing that I can work with to do this. But we basically have a pretty manual-driven process where manager or employees will submit a request to telework or submit a request for flexible hours and whatnot. And then, you know, the manager has to approve it and send an HR, you know, reviews it with them, and then they send it back, and then the employee has to sign the agreement, and then the manager has to send that back to HR to keep in their personnel file. And so there's just a lot of back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if there's a way to streamline that, that it would just, you know, not you just wouldn't have to have the back and forth that's involved right now. I think that's definitely something I would do differently. And you know, maybe the other thing is that I would have loved to have had more people so that we could do maybe more one-on-ones with some managers. And that's something that I know that going forward, I'm going to start, you know, working with individual managers more, because we covered all the managers in the managers forum. I think there's individual and unique needs that if maybe it's just spending an hour with them to understand that and start providing them with ways that they can implement more flexibility within their teams, that that's going to go a long way to ensure that this is a success within our culture.
Yeah, and I think my takeaway from that is that you can do a lot of broadcast communications. You can do forums and focus groups where you're gathering a lot of information. At the end of the day, this comes down, the change comes down to each individual manager. And the more support and specific issues that you, that a coach or you in a coaching role can help them with, can really make a difference. It sounds like that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Okay, so I'd like to finish up today's podcast by asking you what advice you would give to other practitioners who are listening today who may just be embarking on a program of their own or looking at trying to start to address some of those cultural flex sorts of issues. What advice would you give, Erica?
I think the first advice is to over-communicate. If you think that you're communicating too much, you're probably not. Because, you know, even in surveys that we've done as follow-up and asking people, have they heard about smart work, I'm still not at 100%. And to me, I'm going, okay, everyone should know about this. The communication aspect of it is so critical and so important, and it's just getting people thinking about it, you know, whether they're doing that or not. And thinking about communication not just from an email perspective, but hitting people from really all sides. So whether that's creating videos that are reinforcing that, whether that's working with the staffing group to start talking to managers when they are doing new hires, just having them kind of, you know, drop a hint or say something about workplace flexibility to get them thinking about it, whether that's from the executive level and getting the executives to talk about it, whether that's from the employees, so doing more of a ground-up approach, you know, kind of hitting it from all sides so that people understand that this is something that's going to be embedded within the culture and not just staying as an HR initiative or as, you know, just as a program that's going to fade out and kind of a flavor of the month. That would be my biggest piece of advice, is about communication, but also really going to the managers and to the directors that are going to be implementing it within their teams, and truly trying to understand from them what the concerns are, and not going into those conversations with some idea of what their needs are already and how you're going to address it. Because I think that people will be surprised by what managers are saying, and that it's not always an issue with just because they can't see people, they don't know how to manage them, that there's other unique issues that are going to come up. And if the person doesn't address them within the culture, that it's really going to create problems for them going forward in creating that culture of flexibility.
That's really interesting to me, Erica, because what I hear you saying, my takeaway there is I think it's easy for us to think of managers as in opposition to flexibility, like, well, we rolled this program out and we're getting a lot of negativity, or they're not spending a lot of time talking to their employees. I think it's easy for us to sort of throw all the managers in the same category as being opposing, or there are some that are really stellar and then there's everybody else. And so what I hear you saying is to really focus in on building partnerships and connections and coming in with an open mind and open heart about what their concerns are. I guess the question for me is how do you do that? You know, some of the practitioners that are listening may be like, okay, well, yeah, sure, in a perfect world, if there were five of me. Do you have ideas yet about how best to do that? Is it just that it takes a fair amount of time and you kind of got to do them one-on-one? Or how do you think what do you think is the best way to approach that? Because I think it's a good point.
Well, sure. With, you know, we had the focus groups, and we conducted those with, I think, 10 or 12 managers and directors at a time. And we, I mean, truly went into these focus groups with that open mind of we are here to hear from you as managers and directors what your real concerns are about this, and also what do you think is great about this? How do you think that this can benefit your team? And by going into it with that open mind and having kind of across the board, because they were then able to relate to each other, I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing it one-on-one, because
okay.
then you have these kind of broken pieces as to this person has this need and I need to address it, and that person has this need. But what we found through the focus groups was that there were themes that emerged from it. And, you know, we were able to address the managers and directors' concerns as, you know, as that theme and address
okay.
those specific concerns, you know, kind of as a whole. And then also by bringing them together, they were able to go, you know, I've had that issue before, and this is how I solved it. So a lot of our focus group was not even the facilitation aspect of it. It was kind of, at some point it turned into this group therapy session where managers are going, I've had that problem before, and this is how I've worked through it. And then another manager would chime in and go, you know, I did the same thing, and this is also how I did it. And they were bouncing ideas off each other. And I was like, well, this is great. You know, this helps my job. So it was kind of, you know, just taking some of the themes that we heard from there and addressing those in our follow-up to them really helped.
Yeah, and when I've done this too, you can almost physically see the managers that came in fairly resistant to the idea. You almost start to see them physically relaxing a little bit more. It's almost like they exhale.
Yeah.
It's that sort of the benefit of group therapy. Yeah, and I think sometimes we're hesitant to go there. We don't want it to turn into a kumbaya session and, oh, hey, everybody's feeling great, you know, or for it to turn really negative. But I've never had that happen in my sessions. It sounds like you haven't had either. And the benefit is that they start to see potential solutions or potential value, even if they don't have all the answers.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no one there. And I mean, we didn't filter who was supposed to be there and who wasn't supposed to be there. But there was never that aspect of negativity of this is absolutely not working. I can't believe that I am even sitting in this room talking about this because this is not going to work for me. I did kind of go into it going, okay, this could be a disaster. I don't know what they're going to say. And
yeah.
It's like when you get into the room, you're thinking, yes, absolutely. It's just kind of like I got into the room, I'm going, maybe we should have filtered who was here, and maybe I should have come into this with some, yes, this is how we're going to work through that solution. But it didn't happen like that. They were very open, and they were really more curious from us as to what our ideas were. And they were just so appreciative that we were even talking to them about it and even trying to understand what their needs were. At the same time, I would still recommend that there is a lot of follow-up with the managers and directors as to, we heard your concerns, this is what we heard, and this is what we can and cannot do to address them.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're just moving forward and managers are going, okay, I think I talked to you about that, and I don't really understand why that's going against everything I said that I really need for my group. So that was the other thing that we did, was we kept following up with the managers and with the employees and also with the executives and going, okay, this is what we understand your concerns are. This is how we can work through that. This is how we might have some concerns with what you're talking about, or this is why we absolutely cannot implement that. It goes against safety. It goes against policy. You know, it goes against something culturally that we are doing.
And even if you say no, at least they feel like they've been heard. They can
yes.
still keep that gripe or carry that concern around with them, but at least they know that they were heard. I really like that feedback loop. I think that's a really important point. Well, Erica, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us today. I'm definitely going to mark on my calendar to touch base with you in another year, and I'd love to do a follow-up session with you so that we can hear how things have been going. speaking and working with a lot of organizations, I continue to be very, very impressed with the approach that you're taking, not only with the stuff we've talked about today, but with all those tools and policies and all of the a little bit less fun stuff sometimes for practitioners. You've just really built a really solid foundation for all of the great culture change and flexibility work that's going to take place, I know, in your organization over the next few years. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And that concludes today's Life Meets Work Thought Leader teleconference. This is Kira Cavanaugh, and hoping that you have a great day. Thank you.